I genuinely enjoy my Admission Straight Talk interviews. I've gotten to speak with fascinating people and learn about amazing initiatives. And through the wonders of podcasting, I've also been able to share the experience with you, my listener. While I have several favorite interviews, one of them certainly is the one I did last year with MBAs across America. I'm thrilled to have them back for the first repeat interview on Admission Straight Talk in this, our 51st episode. Before we get to the interview, I would like to invite you, if you are an MBA applicant, to attend the next webinar I am hosting, which will be on the secrets to MBA acceptance. So if you want to learn the secrets to MBA acceptance, then please join me on Wednesday, April 30th at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm going to discuss the four steps that will enormously enhance your chances of acceptance to the best MBA programs for you. I'll also link to the sign-up page in the show notes at info.accepted.com/51 for the secrets to MBA acceptance. Now, a little background on today's show. Last year in March, a little over a year ago, I stumbled across a tweet about MBAs across America during an HBS chat. Intrigued, I learned a little bit more about it. At the time, there were four first-year HBS MBA students deciding that, and at the time, the next summer, now last summer, instead of doing a traditional internship, they would spend 10 weeks visiting 10 cities, not just the usual business centers, and working with 10 visionary entrepreneurs who would like to get a fresh perspective on something they are working on. And they did almost exactly that. They logged some 8,000 miles, visiting 8 cities in the far corners of this vast country, and meeting with 8 different business owners in 8 weeks as they crisscrossed America. Let's get more details and information from our guests today, Michael Baker and Casey Gerald from MBAs Across America. Welcome to Admission Straight Talk. I'm really, really looking forward to today's show.
Thank you so much for having us, Linda, and most importantly, having us back as the first repeat guest. We really do appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
You're very welcome. Now, I got to ask you first off, what was it like? You got to a strange town. I genuinely enjoy my Admission Straight Talk interviews. I've gotten to speak with fascinating people and learn about amazing initiatives. And through the wonders of podcasting, I've also been able to share the experience with you, my listener. While I have several favorite interviews, one of them certainly is the one I did last year with MBAs Across America. I'm thrilled to have them back for the first repeat interview on Admission Straight Talk in this, our 51st episode. Before we get to the interview, I would like to invite you, if you are an MBA applicant, to attend the next webinar I am hosting, which will be on the secrets to MBA acceptance. So if you want to learn the secrets to MBA acceptance, then please join me on Wednesday, April 30th at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm going to discuss the four steps that will enormously enhance your chances of acceptance to the best MBA programs for you. I'll also link to the sign-up page in the show notes at info.accepted.com/51 for the secrets to MBA acceptance. Now, a little background on today's show. Last year in March, a little over a year ago, I stumbled across a tweet about MBAs across America during an HBS chat. Intrigued, I learned a little bit more about it. At the time, there were four first-year HBS MBA students deciding that, and at the time, the next summer, now last summer, instead of doing a traditional internship, they would spend 10 weeks visiting 10 cities, not just the usual business centers, and working with 10 visionary entrepreneurs who would like to get a fresh perspective on something they are working on. And they did almost exactly that. They logged some 8,000 miles, visiting 8 cities in the far corners of this vast country, and meeting with 8 different business owners in 8 weeks as they crisscrossed America. Let's get more details and information from our guests today, Michael Baker and Casey Gerald from MBAs Across America. Welcome to Admission Straight Talk. I'm really, really looking forward to today's show.
Thank you so much for having us, Linda, and most importantly, having us back as the first repeat guest. We really do appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
You're very welcome. Now, I got to ask you first off, what was it like? You got to a strange town. You're meeting essentially a client for the first time. What was an engagement like when you hit that new town on your journey last summer? What did you actually do during your week there? And you can use an example or two if you want, and you know, Casey, you want to start?
Happy to. Okay. Sure, absolutely. There's one speak and one entrepreneur that immediately comes to mind when you ask that question, and that is our first entrepreneur in Detroit, Sebastian Jackson at the Social Club Grooming Company. You know, just a little background on Sebastian. Sebastian's about 27 now. He's from Flint, Michigan, and he runs a barbershop in Detroit on the campus of Wayne State University. And his barbershop, through it, he recycles all the hair from the barbershop to plant trees in Detroit, which has lost half of its urban canopy in the past 10 years. And I think, you know, when you talk about a client, right, we are so far removed from seeing the entrepreneurs that we work with as clients, and it's primarily because of the kinds of interactions that we had with Sebastian. We showed up on day one. It was our first time in Detroit. And the first question we asked all of our entrepreneurs is, what drove you to this? And if you ask that of somebody in business school, they probably will say, you know, I want to be a founder, I want to IPO, I want to be in TechCrunch, right? Sebastian became an entrepreneur because his mother was a paranoid schizophrenic, and the only way he could provide for himself and his brother was to cut hair, and he got really good at it. So he opened a barbershop, and then he found that hair was a powerful accelerant for compost, and so he said, I've got a lot of it, and my city needs a lot of compost to plant more trees and revitalize the city, so I'm going to use my barbershop to help my city.
Wow.
And we got there, and to be honest, there was a bit of skepticism from the standpoint of, okay, here are these Harvard MBAs dropping in. They're going to come in as experts and try to tell me what to do with my business. And I think we were fighting against that quite often, and so what we did was not say, show me your financials. We'd say, tell me your story. And through sharing those personal stories, we found really deep human connections. And from there, then we could get down to the brass tacks of helping the business. So we spent a week with Sebastian redesigning his compensation structure, thinking about how to recruit a new team. We spent a week helping him think about how to turn his clients into evangelists. He talked about CRM. We literally built a Google Doc that he could put on an iPad and then put it on his counter to keep track of his customers. And then we connected him to folks throughout the city who he partnered with to do a lot of really extraordinary work in communities. And he called a few months afterwards and said, when you guys got here, I was on track to do $6,000 of revenue a month, and now I'm on track to do $18,000 of revenue a month.
Wow.
I've partnered with the folks that you connected me with to do things like pop-up barbershops and tear down dilapidated homes to renovate my barbershop. So I think that in and of itself is really an encapsulation of what a week looked like. Very unpredictable, very human, right, very in the weeds, but also a mix of sort of strategic thinking, very tactical things, and really just being there as friends, listening not just for that week, but convincing folks that we were really committed to being friends with them and partners with them long after that week in the summer.
That's a fantastic story. That is really amazing. Now, you view, I'm thinking about that in terms of our own work. We definitely view the people that we work with as clients, but I can tell you there is no higher compliment that we get than when we get emails from them that said, you know, you were so much more than a consultant, and I hope to stay in touch with you, and you know, you really were a friend to me. So I think I know a little bit about what you're talking about there. I also think of clients as a negative term, but it is wonderful when that client-advisor relationship transforms itself into that of friendship. And that's right. Great. I mean, I've had, you know, former clients call me years after I worked with them, and it was really, really nice.
Yeah.
You were dealing with small businesses, and I assume some mom and pop shops. The issues they were. Did you ever feel that your education, in terms of your, you know, your Harvard MBA education, was so far beyond the issues they were dealing with, or did you use the strategies and tactics you learned at Harvard? Was it relevant?
Yeah, I think the first thing is that when we showed up to work with these entrepreneurs, we didn't think of ourselves as showing up as Harvard MBAs. We thought of ourselves showing up as humans and people, and how can we bring our whole selves to this interaction? So a lot of that started out with, you know, what can we do to be helpful immediately? And in Montana, for example, where we worked with an amazing entrepreneur named Sarah Calhoun, who runs Red Ant Pants, for Sarah, being helpful initially was, helping her set up, you know, the festival grounds for a 10,000-person country music festival she was throwing. So it was driving stakes into the ground and cutting PVC pipe and driving around on a golf cart to welcome people to the festival. So, you know, at that level, you know, we didn't even come into it with the expectation that, you know, we are just MBAs. You know, we're also people, right? And then beyond that, once you go into really looking at the biggest problems or opportunities facing the business, you know, we did find that the things that we learned in school and in our careers were helpful, and not all of them and not in every situation, but certainly helpful and gave us sort of a common language as a team to talk about, but also gave us the opportunity to share some of the things that we've learned in school with these folks who are really out there building things, which was exciting.
So I guess in terms of scalability, you know, I normally talk about scalability in terms of going bigger. In your sense, scalability meant that you were able to apply the strategies you've learned in school or in life on a small scale.
Absolutely. And I think the most useful thing, to be honest with you, was the questions that we were able to ask, right?
Just like
things
what?
That if you think about it from the Donald Rumsfeld standpoint, right, of the known known unknowns and the unknown unknowns, right? The entrepreneurs we were working with had extraordinary known knowns, right? These people were experts at running their business. They had done it. They had courage. They had passion. They knew also that there were sometimes some very fundamental things that they didn't know how to do, right? Online marketing, you know, CRM, mm-hmm. you know, financials, things like that. And those are the things that obviously in business school, right, it's just, you know, par for the course. And so we can go in and say, well, you know, my background was actually in online marketing, or my background was in, you know, getting customer insights, right? And that is a way that we can work with entrepreneurs. But often I think the biggest catalyzing moments came from those unknown unknowns and just sitting with an entrepreneur when we don't know the answer and they don't know the answer, but we're working through the answer together. I think about another example with Sarah. She came to us on the second day and said, hey, Al Jazeera has called and they want to cover the festival. And I don't know whether I ought to do it. What should I do? Right? And so when the four of us were sitting there, and we're not media consultants, right? There is no class on Al Jazeera in business school. But we were there as friends, and we could work through collaboratively those unknown unknowns. So we started researching Al Jazeera and talking to folks that we knew in the media, and Hisham was from Morocco, right?
And right. You're fading out a little bit.
Sorry. So, you know, through that live problem solving with Sarah and with entrepreneurs, you know, that was the, I think, one of the most special things that we were able to do. And we think that scales in a very powerful way, that you don't have to be an expert. You just have to be curious and committed.
Now, how many of the businesses that you worked with, you worked with eight, you mentioned two so far, how many of them implemented your advice and reported either increased revenue or improvement in whatever situation they were attempting to deal with?
I think that's a great question that, you know, really depends, right? You know, you talk about helping Sarah think through whether she should bring Al Jazeera. That's not really a revenue question, right?
Right, right. Know? That's why I didn't limit it to revenue. I mean, the Sebastian obviously had fantastic results.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, McKinsey would love those results.
Exactly. So I think of the six entrepreneurs that we spent their week-long engagements with, all six took action on something that we've helped find with them, that we worked through with them. Some of that action was just a different way of approaching their marketing, right? We worked with a brewing company in Asheville that was thinking about how to expand their market and how to really beat their new entrant competitors. And so we put up a very simple Facebook survey that showed that they had this really huge untapped potential in the female customer market, right? And so that kind of insight went directly into the efforts that they were doing. But I think it's a great question as we scale this, what metrics matter in this, right? Mm-hmm. We know jobs matter. We want to put the wind at the back of America's job creators. We know growth matters. We want to increase, you know, the metro GDP, the revenue and profitability of our business. But this really sticky thing of beyond profit, beyond revenue, beyond jobs, what is the kind of transformation we want to see? And we're excited about finding a measure of that works.
Okay. All right. Now, where is MBA Across America going in the future? In a recent New York Times article that I saw about it, it tells me that you are applying for not-for-profit status and offering the MBA Across America model to other business schools and MBA interns. Can you elaborate?
Yeah, for sure. So over the past months, you know, since we got back from our journey, we've been talking to MBAs at other programs and recruiting an inaugural class. And we didn't honestly know what type of response we would get from our peers, but the response that we got was really, really fantastic and almost overwhelming. So we got about 70 individual applicants from 12 different MBA programs across the country.
Wow.
And we've invited 9 teams to join us on the road this summer, and it's looking like 8 to 9 of those teams will be joining us on the road. So 32 to 36 MBAs are going to be hitting the road with us this summer.
That's great. And which schools are involved?
Yep. So that group of 9 that I mentioned, mm-hmm. we have 2 from Babson, 2 from Stanford, 2 from Columbia, 1 from HBS, 1 from Wharton, and 1 from Ross.
That is fantastic. That's really amazing. Congratulations. And you both, I mean, you're finishing your MBA soon, and I believe one of you is the CEO and one is the COO, right?
That's right.
Okay. And how are entrepreneurs applying for teams to come and visit? Are you screening them? I mean, how is that? Are you screening the teams from the schools? How is that working?
Yeah. So just to give you a sense of how we approach building this movement on the MBA side, right? We obviously want great MBAs, but we judge greatness not by what school you go to, but by what values you believe in, right? Mm-hmm. And so we filtered all of our MBAs on 4 core values. 1 is care deeply about the mission. 2 is to listen more than you speak. 3 is to act more than you plan. And 4 is to embrace and navigate uncertainty and discomfort. And we think if we select people based on those 4 values, they can use a huge array of skills to add value and help us build this movement, and we think we've done that with this class. On the entrepreneur side, we're looking for 3 things, and our teams and partners across the country are helping us find entrepreneurs that meet these 3 guidelines. The first is that they're in a place that matters, right? We think about a place that's hard hit like Detroit or that's coming back like New Orleans. We think about sort of a heartland mini hub, right, a Kansas City, an Omaha, Boulder. We think about a rural town like White Sulphur Spring, right? We want to bet on these places where often the best resources are not going. We think that's got to change. Second is we want to bet on businesses and entrepreneurs and small businesses that are poised for growth. We don't just think that's high-tech entrepreneurs, right? Mm-hmm. McKinsey did a great study that said they're high-growth companies across every sector, every industry, every geography. And we believe that, but also we think in some places, you know, even if you're not high growth, adding 2 jobs or doubling your revenue, right, can have a really big impact. But we want to have a diverse portfolio of entrepreneurs across a lot of sectors and geographies that are poised for growth. The third, and this is really important, is that we want to bet on entrepreneurs who are making a positive social impact in their community. Mm-hmm. That does not mean that they are social enterprises, right? We think that every business is a social enterprise. Either you're making a positive social impact or a negative one, right? There are no Switzerlands when it comes to business impact. And we want to broaden that conversation and support folks who are creating jobs and changing lives and communities. So we have a whole national search going on right now that we actually have a landing page on our website.
At mbaxamerica.com/entrepreneur search.
I'll tell you what, can you guys, after the show, I'll include it in the show notes, and send me links both to the page where entrepreneurs can sign up, and if you have a page aimed at MBAs or MBA teams, I'd like to include both in the show notes, okay?
Great.
So you just email me that after the show, and we'll definitely include it in the show notes.
Thank you.
So And obviously, I mean, you've lived your ideals. I mean, the first example you gave with the barbershop in Detroit, Sebastian Jackson, right?
Right.
Right. I mean, that's you know, not high tech, depressed city, with a giving to the community aim in terms of his innovative use of the hair that he cuts. I mean, you really have lived those ideals. Now, do you see the MBA Across America model expanding outside the MBA world, perhaps to Masters in Public Policy programs or to law schools or med schools, or perhaps expanding outside the United States?
You know, I think it's a great question. What we believe is that sort of MBAs Across America is what happens when a mega challenge meets a mega trend, and mm-hmm. this gets to your question, right?
Right.
The mega challenge is in America, but probably around the world. In America, it's just a big question of, you know, how are we going to sustain and revive and rekindle the American dream? How are we going to create jobs and opportunity for people? That's a huge challenge.
Right.
There's a study that for the first time, more Americans think that the American dream is out of reach. Mm-hmm. That's a problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is probably the case in a lot of places around the world. So what we're saying is that there's this mega trend of our generation, a millennial generation that is hungry, that is yearning to use our lives and our skills and our passion to help solve the biggest problems on the planet. We're taking an approach that starts with MBAs, right, that starts with MBAs in America in their summers that hopefully will scale to include all MBA programs, to include mm-hmm. programs beyond the summer, to create, to involve programs outside of America. But we think it's that we are part of a much larger a cultural shift mm-hmm. that can definitely apply to lawyers and designers and public policy folks of using the skills and resources and talent that we have to help solve some of the globe's biggest challenges. And if we can be even a small part of that great effort, I think we'll be very excited about it.
For sure. In the meantime, you probably have lots of opportunities and lots of room for growth within both America and within MBAs. So,
right.
You know, yeah. You have a little bit of territory to conquer there in the interim before you expand your horizons beyond that. It was interesting, as you know, I recently took a trip back east, and during the trip, my husband and I went up to Ithaca. We visited Cornell Johnson, and on the way home, we stopped in a couple of places just because we're a little bit of history buffs. So we stopped in a place called Albany, New York, and we also stopped in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And Scranton, Pennsylvania was actually a major, major urban center in the latter part of the 1900s and the early 20th century. A latter part of the 1800s and the early 20th century, 19th century and early 20th. And so we stopped at some historic site there, and it's so clearly, I mean, the woman who was giving us a tour and talking to us was talking about it as a city in decline, or who that has declined. It's lost, I think, you know, more than half of its population. There are no jobs because it was a mining center. And when the coal ran out and the iron ore ran out, the jobs went elsewhere. And you see that also a little bit as you drive around upstate New York. Upstate New York is very much trying to revive itself by welcoming entrepreneurs. There's a very strong entrepreneurial push in upstate New York. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. At the same time, I live in Los Angeles, which is a major, major city, and there definitely is entrepreneurship in LA. But the cost of living is miserably high here. And I definitely have children, grown children, who are thinking of leaving just because they don't want to put up with the traffic and the cost of living and the high taxes, et cetera. And I think that on some level, your approach of going outside the major cities, perhaps to cities in need or to smaller cities and maybe even prosperous communities, but smaller communities, and working with entrepreneurs there kind of addresses so many different needs in our society, both for growth in these smaller communities and the fact that quality of living and has declined in many of the known entrepreneurial centers. And, of course, the cost of living is very high.
Right.
So, you know, you've got a lot of things going there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, your story is the story of America in a way, the story that you just told, right? I mean, America was a startup, and it was a startup started by people, you know, who were leaving the world that they were tired of to start a new one.
And they were all going to a frontier.
Exactly. And so what we're saying is that the new frontier of America is out there, and there are people creating it and forging it and finding it and struggling to do that, but doing it nonetheless. And we're lucky and fortunate and blessed just to see and meet these people who are so brave. And if we can be useful in the process, that's even better.
Right.
But I think you're 100% right, and that's not a new phenomenon in the history of our society, at least.
My father always pointed out, my father was both an entrepreneur and an immigrant, and he pointed out that with the exception of Native Americans and generally African Americans, and of course a small group that came over to Georgia who were actually prisoners, everybody who came to America came in search of a better life. They left what was known, they left their home, and everybody they knew and everything they knew to go usually across an ocean to a strange country where they could possibly never go back to where they came from. And he felt, and I don't know if this was an original thought to him or if he read it somewhere and then just I learned it from him, that that was really a critical element in the American culture and American psyche.
Right.
So anyway, that would again, sorry?
Yeah. No, for sure. We were just in Chicago last week at the Forbes Reinventing America Summit, and Mayor Rahm Emanuel spoke, and he said, you know, my grandfather came here as an immigrant, and two generations later, his grandson is the mayor, you know.
Right.
That happens here. And if we don't do all that we can to unleash the resources from the centers of power in America to support those kinds of efforts, and we might see a decline in those kinds of stories, and that story is very central to the future of this country as it was central and has been central for the last 250 years.
Right. No, agreed. Now, do you think MBAs, the MBA Across America experience as an internship is only appropriate for an MBA wanting to go into entrepreneurship, or could someone interested in consulting or a tech startup or some other industry like media entertainment, benefit from the experience from a professional perspective?
Yeah, I think anyone can benefit from getting out and meeting people across the country, understanding different perspectives, and being put in a high-pressure situation, you know, six times over to add some value in a very condensed amount of time, right? So whether or not you're going to be going to work for Goldman or McKinsey or start your own company, you need to be able to be very effective in a very short amount of time, right? So we don't have the vision that everyone who does MBAs Across America as a fellow should then go and start their own social enterprise in Kansas City. Instead, we think that folks who are starting social enterprises, folks who are going to work at McKinsey, folks who are eventually going to be leaders at places like General Electric, those people need to understand and have a perspective of the challenges and opportunities being faced in communities across the country, because that'll make them better business leaders and give them a more nuanced business filter to make decisions. So we think that this experience is valuable for all MBAs, and we're really excited in a few years to hopefully have MBAX fellows both across the country but across industries who can help us further this mission of supporting America's job creators.
Well, to a certain extent, doesn't your own experience, not you two individually, but there were initially four of you who did this, and you mentioned to me that one got her dream job, not with MBA Across America, and I think another is also starting his own business, but somewhere else, right?
Right.
Right. So clearly, they were not hampered, if you will, or hurt in any way, shape, or form by the experience they had that last summer. Now, what was the biggest aha moment for you last summer? Each of you. Mike, you want to start?
Yeah, I'll start. So our first week, like Casey said, we were in Detroit. And, you know this, we had the best of intentions going into last summer to do something something different and something that we thought would be certainly exciting and we hoped meaningful. But that first week in Detroit really changed the whole tone and trajectory of the trip for me and I think all of us. Specifically, there was a moment where we were being taken around a neighborhood called Brightmoor in Detroit by a community organized by Kirk Mays, part of the Brightmoor Alliance. And Brightmoor is a neighborhood that has been so hard hit by the recession that politicians there have said that, you know, we should just turn the lights off in Brightmoor. But this community organizer, Kirk, has dedicated his life and his work and his career to bringing this neighborhood back and supporting his city. And he was nice enough to drive us around the neighborhood and share his story, share the story of the neighborhood, and explain why this work was so important to him. So the three of us are sitting in his car. I'm sorry, the four of us are sitting in his car, and he's saying, you know, if you took my blood out of my body and projected it as an image, it would be this work. And I want to leave a legacy for my child that he knows that I did everything I could to bring this city back, and that's what keeps me going.
Wow.
And what it did was it held up a mirror to the four of us, and it made us all ask the question, if you took the blood out of our bodies, what would that image project? You know, what are we working towards? What legacy are we hoping to leave? And what can we do with our skills in some small way to be more like Kirk? So that was the moment for me where, you know, it clarified a lot of my career priorities, but was an aha moment that getting MBAs out of the classroom and cubicle and into America to work with people like Kirk, there's no way that they're going to come back unchanged from that.
True. Casey?
Yeah, there's so many. For me, the whole vision, I think, boils down to one night, I think, in rural Montana, in White Sulphur Springs. And here in the little cow pasture, there was a black guy from Texas, a white guy from Maryland, a Jewish girl from New Mexico, and an Arab guy from Morocco pitching a tent in the cow pasture in rural Montana amongst 13,000 country Westerners. And what's special about that? What's powerful about that, right? I think it reflects that we live at a time when the saying is more true than ever, that a small group of committed, thoughtful people can actually change the world, not because they're geniuses, not because they go to Harvard Business School, right, but because they see that we're all in this together. And the kindness, the small acts of kindness of so many people who made this journey for us possible, who showed us the possibility, not just of our lives, but of the time that we live in, if we came together and look past our races and our religions and our degrees and where we're from and where we're going and our jobs and just saw each other as human. And I think human aha was very profound for me and convinced me that if we could just get folks to see that, if we didn't add another job, right, to the or another dollar to GDP, if we saw everybody, if we saw that, you know, we were committed and connected to each other in a really inextricable way, and that also meant that we could do great things together, then this movement would not be in vain, I think. And that was very powerful for me.
It's a wonderful thought. Lovely, lovely thought. Now, you will both very soon be Harvard MBAs, in other words, Harvard degree MBA degree holders. What has been the highlight of your HBS experience other than MBAs across America? Casey, you want to start this time?
Sure. Highlight. Oh, HBS has been like a secret garden for me, right? You know, it's like you come in and you look behind the bushes, and it's like, you know, just awesome stuff there.
Wow. It is gorgeous, too.
Yes, it is.
But that's not what you're talking about. That's not what you're talking about.
That's not what I'm talking about. But yes, not literally looking behind the bushes, but. But yeah,
I was thinking more in front of the bushes. But anyways,
right. I think the highlight for me, a highlight that I think really encapsulates this whole experience, was the day that we were initially turned down for funding from the administration.
Oh wow!
And Yeah, this was about a year ago. And we had, at that point, we had bet the whole house on being able to get administration money. And they've come on, and HBS has been so supportive now. But at this moment, it seemed like the end of the world had happened. And I remember the four of us were sitting, and we were just so depressed. And we were wandering through one of the faculty buildings. And our first year operations professor, his office, we were passing by, and we said, well, why don't we go in and talk to Ryan? And we went in, and, I mean, you could just look at our faces and see that we were totally in despair. And he said, guys, what happened? And this is a Harvard Business School professor. He said, guys, what happened? And we said, oh, you know, they said we're not going to get any money, and I don't think, you know, we don't know if this is going to work. And he said, no, guys, this has to work. This is an awesome idea. You guys are amazing. We're going to make this happen. How can I help? And I think that moment is so indicative of so many moments that I've had here at HBS where there was always somebody. It could have been a faculty member, an administrator, a friend, a classmate, an alum, who I went to with a problem, or I went to in a real rut, or I went to and I was having a down day. And they didn't say, oh, I'm too busy, or, oh, this doesn't really help my career. They said, how can I help? And how can I be supportive? And that for me is a real debt that I don't think I can ever pay back, but hopefully I can pay forward to somebody else.
That's great. Lovely. Mike, what would you say?
Yeah, I'd say the thing for me that's been most powerful about HBS is, you know, you write your admissions application and you're trying to paint a very clear picture that you're confident that you know what you want to do and where you're going to come out after school. And I'm, you know, this is the same for folks applying to any MBA program. But what's amazing to me is I look back and I read that application, and I can't believe that it was 2 years ago. It seems like it was so much longer because business school exposed me to so many different perspectives, so many different possibilities, you know, just my imagination of what I can do with my career is so much broader than it was when I wrote those admissions essays. And I think that's been the most powerful thing about HBS for me, is that it helped me step back from my narrowly focused, you know, day to day and say, okay, you know, there's a world of possibilities out there. This is what this side of the world looks like. This is what this other side of the world looks like. And I'm really grateful for that change in perspective, because I, you know, if not for HBS, I wouldn't have met these co-founders. I wouldn't have done this project. And I certainly wouldn't be embarking on a 15-week road trip this summer. So that's been the most powerful thing for me.
So you guys are going to be traveling around also with these different groups, or visiting different cities over the summer, right?
That's right.
Okay. Do you have any advice for MBA applicants dreaming of attending Harvard Business School? At this point, it'd be more people probably applying next year. I think the deadline is passed for Harvard, or is about to pass. Let's aim for next year's applicants.
Advice for people applying to Harvard Business School. You know, I think, and I probably said this on our last podcast.
It's possible. I asked a very similar question last year.
I believe it even more strongly now. Don't apply to a single graduate school if you don't feel confident in sort of, you know, not necessarily what you want to do with your life, but what you will not do with your life. I think that sort of flip, right? It's not so much that you've got to know what job you're going to take, but I think knowing what you're not going to do demands that you sort of think about what your principles and priorities are, what you value, what kind of life you want to lead. Because I think a business school, not just HBS, but business school in a broader sense, can be a very confusing place if you don't have some type of core set of values about what matters to you in your life and your world. And so I'd say my biggest advice is, before you write that application, before you commit to applying to business school, think about what really matters. Because the answer could be that you don't need to go to business school at all, right?
Right.
If you come, use it as a time not to necessarily find yourself, but to create yourself and to create the world and the life that you want based on the values that you believe in.
Great. Wonderful. Mike, you have anything to add?
Yeah, I'll give a slightly less Confucian.
You're being very poetic, Casey.
Get the GMAT done early.
Good. Okay, that's much less confusion. Is that it?
That's it.
Okay.
This is how we run this organization. I sort of say things that make very little sense, and then Mike, you know, gives an action plan, which is
yin and yang.
Yep.
Okay. Well, as long as it works, and it looks, judging by the progress you've made, in the past year, it looks like this yin and yang complementary partnership, right brain, left brain, whatever you want to call it, works really, really well. Congratulations to both of you.
Thank you.
I think our time is just about up. I want to thank you so much for agreeing to this call and discussing your amazing experience and innovation with MBAs across America. I already promise you that in approximately 1 year, you're going to get another email from me, because I'm going to want to know how it's been going. Okay?
This is like an annual board meeting.
Well, I hope it's a little bit more interesting than a board meeting, but I am sure that if we check in with you and again in another year, A, you can again tell us about fantastic growth and new dreams and new insights, and I'm sure it'll again be a wonderful show. Where can a listener learn more about what you're doing and what you're planning for the future? And again, I'll include whatever links you provide in the show notes.
Sure. You can check out our website at mbaxamerica.com.
Okay, great. Listener, thank you, too, for joining us. Again, there are several great resources linked to in today's show notes. I already mentioned the MBA Across America site and the forums that they mentioned, as well as the sign-up page for the webinar I'm going to be hosting in a couple of weeks, MBA Secrets, or Secrets for MBA Acceptance. And that will be linked to at info.accepted.com/51, so please check that out. Finally, please share your feedback. 5-star reviews on iTunes are particularly welcome. You can leave any kind of feedback on iTunes, the blog, or by emailing linda@accepted.com. And even if you don't have any 5-star reviews, please do provide your thoughts in any of those locations. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. And this week, we're going to take a week off, just for the Passover and Easter holidays, and I'll talk to you again in 2 weeks. Have a great holiday. Thank you.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.